Today on The Breakdown, it's a near bubble situation because there's $20,000 for the buy-in for this Triton event. And we are just three people off the money. And two players are going to get into it. They're going to get dirty and muddy, and it's not going to be pretty. And let's just say the knives come out and blood is spilled. And I made it sound like there was like $20,000 like in the prize pool. No, it's a $20,000 buy-in event for the Triton. So that means that, you know, first place is, you know, $600,000 or something like that. There's all this money to be won. That's the point. It's going to be a bubble fight. It's the Sharks versus the... I don't remember. I never saw the movie. The Sharks versus like the Wind Chimes, the Jets. It's the Jets, you know, and they're snapping and sort of dancing together in sort of a synchronized way, because that's how we fight in poker. On The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey. That went a lot of places.
I am proud of that.
I think it was reasonably good.
Thank you.
Yeah, 20K.
I can't believe I remembered the Jets and the Sharks. I've never seen the movie.
Didn't it start as a play, you cretin?
Fair enough, but I haven't seen the movie.
Have you seen the play?
Yeah.
Of course you've seen the play.
I'm a theater kid.
Yeah, you went to college for theater. For theatrical performance.
I didn't go there for theater, but I ended up studying theater while I was there. I didn't plan on it. You know what I mean? I was like, I want to do theater. I was like, I want to be a poet. And so then I was like, I got to do something more practical than poetry. So I went to theater.
Yep.
Here we are. Yeah,
now you're David Mamet 2.0.
That's what I wanted to be, actually.
Yeah, but what happened?
It was hard. It was a hard road, and I decided not to even begin to walk down it, is the truth. I was like, that's a long, difficult road. I'm going to do something else. Yeah, and I did.
The path of least resistance. That's why you sell insurance now.
I mean...
It sells itself, baby. Everybody needs it.
Yeah, path of least resistance is definitely my path, if I can find it. I will always...
It's a wise path.
I like that path. People are like, I love the grind. I'm like, I love the hind. You know what I mean? Like, does that make sense?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Like,
you're going to have to explain what you mean.
I mean, like, the hind legs, you know, not the grind legs.
What are the grind legs?
The grind legs are the ones who are working all the time. They're moving, moving, and also getting ground up. Getting ground up by the system. The hind legs are the tasted, choppy ones.
So I'm confused in your metaphor, because it seems like when you're talking about the grind legs, you're talking as if they are your legs. But when you're talking about the hind legs, you're talking about it as if there are things you're going to eat.
I prefer the hind legs.
Okay. No, it all makes sense. Don't worry.
Yeah.
So if you ever want to live the life that Jonathan Levy lives, you just got it basically just got laid out for you. It's pretty, if you don't understand what he was talking about, then that's on you.
I just gave away the secrets of the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's the fabulous life. You can have it too. You just got to, you know.
Be honest. You were a senior in college and you read The Secret and you're like, oh, now I don't have to do the theater thing.
I'm happy to say that when I did learn about The Secret, I was quite skeptical and never Why? Became unskeptical of it.
But everybody has a Ferrari now.
You know... All right, here's the quick story about The Secret. You all forced right. me to tell the story.
Why have I done this to us?
So here's the story. It's good. It's a expected value mathy person's dream, this story. So congratulations, all of you.
Congratulations, 40% of you.
Yeah. Well, you know, of our listenership, it might be a little higher. Anyway, we'll so I was in a group of people. We were all together. It doesn't even matter why. There was like 20 of us. And for some reason... There was the video about The Secret, which was like 45 minutes long. And The Secret is...
I didn't know there was a video.
There was a video, and it was like a video with like lots of famous people in it. It was really
like,
weird.
Was it like kind of people walking on the beach in flowy white clothing, like grainy VHS
no,
footage
it's like,
type?
It's like famous people, like I think Oprah was in it, but maybe I'm wrong, so don't sue me, Oprah, because I don't remember. It was a long time ago. But like somewhat famous people... Like sitting, talking to the camera, explaining why The Secret's so great. So, by the way, so the idea behind The Secret, if you don't know, is you basically think about the thing that you want, and then it appears to you. Not like in that moment, but like over the next few weeks. So if you and they literally use examples like, if you really picture yourself in a Ferrari, you'll be driving a Ferrari kind of stuff. Like they didn't shy away from like the crazy shit basically and showed people like driving a Ferrari happily after not having a car kind of a thing. And it's like, wow. So I was in, so about, I saw this with like 20 people, my hippiest friends in fairness, like people who are not mathy at all, right? This was a long time ago.
So, like spiritual people,
yes, yes,
who would like believe this.
Who were this was more their leaning, right? So they were all super into this, and I was the skeptical one. Shocking, I know. And I was like, guys, come on, this is crazy. Like, we can all just imagine we're millionaires, and then we'll be millionaires, and we don't have to do anything because that's really what the idea.
Isn't there like
the
a long book about this?
Yes.
How is it long?
I don't know. It's a lot of stories, I imagine.
Yeah.
A lot of stories. So, so they really pushed back and said they believed it, and I said, let's okay, everybody, tell me what your thing is that you're going to like envision. I'll write it down and we'll check back in a month and we'll see how many of you have it. Like, let's do an experiment. Like, I could be wrong. Prove me wrong. Not a single person took me up on it. Zero people. And I thought that was very telling that it's fun to talk about, but when the chips are down, no one wants to, you know, really, because come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like when somebody's making an outlandish claim about sports and you're like, oh, we can actually bet on this.
Exactly. You know? And then they're like, well, I mean, I don't bet.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if you really believed it, you probably would, though, right?
Right.
Like, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you bet something? Like, it's what we always say in the investing world, Grant. Don't tell me what you think. Show me your portfolio, right?
Yes, we say
that. Put your money where your mouth is.
We always say that. We're wearing our pinstripe suits, and we say that to the bums on the street.
They're like, do you have a dollar for food? I'm like, what's your portfolio?
Yeah, show me.
What
show
stocks
me,
do you own?
Where are your high yield savings accounts? Show me them now.
I want to understand your investing ideology. What do you believe in? Where is your conviction?
How can I put this dollar in your hand? This is worth 80 cents immediately. In my hand, this is $1.20.
Exactly.
How can I do that to society?
Exactly.
How can I do that to America?
I'm stealing from the economy by doing that.
We just created a great opening scene for a movie, by the
actually,
way.
Actually, that is really great.
Yeah.
I do love it.
Yeah.
I do love it.
Yeah. Kind of like an American Psycho esque type movie, maybe.
Oh, why does it always have to go there for you? It always has to be about killing people.
What the fuck? Why do you do this?
What did I do? You said American Psycho unsolicited. Unsolicited.
I don't even necessarily mean the killing people part. I just mean the Christian Bale character part. Mm. Like, if we're focusing on our main character, who is the one who's talking to the person in this demeaning way.
Right.
I'm imagining a profile of this person being the theme of the movie.
Right. Okay.
You know?
Sure. No, so, that's totally...
No, it's okay. I'll just come up with great movie ideas, and you just shit on everything I say, and you make the audience think that I'm doing weird things that I'm not doing for no reason.
First of all, it was a great movie idea.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I didn't shit on it. I just said you always go to murder. And in this case as well, because left unsaid, clearly with all this, is that the Christian Bale character takes an axe to the person eventually.
Well, I mean, you would think if we were going to follow the path of American Psycho, he's taking an axe to somebody else later in the movie, and that was just indicative of his character.
Oh, okay. You know what? Fair enough. I'll give you that one. Point Denison.
Of course. Continue.
I actually also like the idea of someone asking, like before they give the homeless person the dollar, like asking the homeless person, but sincerely asking them about like what they think about certain like investment, you know, things like, do you think Google's still a good place to put money? Or, you know, like, what do you think about AI now? Like, should I be, you know what I mean? But they mean it sincerely. It can't be like making fun of the person.
Like they're trying to see if
it
it's
shows
actually...
something about the person who's trying to give the money, not making fun of the homeless person.
Right.
They're like trying to get everyone's opinion because they're so lost.
Well, that's
wait a second.
That's a different movie.
That's a movie too.
You know who? Okay.
What?
So, in the first movie, I don't know who the star is yet, but it's not this guy. But in your movie, it's Steve Carell, and he's down on his luck as like an investment banker who has just like not made any good decisions for the past 5 years. And the young kids are coming in with their analytics and they're ruining his shit. You know.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
That's pretty good. I can see it. The only concern I have is because he was in The Big Short as an investment banker type guy. That's
a very different character than the character I described.
It is, but still, is
Mark
it ruined?
Mark Baum. Was
yeah,
that his
right.
name? Yeah.
maybe we should go for the obvious number two choice instead of Steve Carell, which would be Dana Carvey. Because obviously he could play the shit out of that.
Of course, because he's the Turtle Man or whatever.
Turtle Man.
There's like Master of Disguise or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Master of Disguise. Wow. That was like one of Dana Carvey's very few movies. Of course, the Wayne's World movies. But
apparently, this came out a while back that maybe you even told me this. I don't remember. But when 9/11 occurred, they were shooting Master of Disguise or whatever it's called. And he was in his turtle suit. And there's like pictures of him in a prayer circle with his turtle suit on about 9/11.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I'm going to look it up while we're talking because I need to see that. Just Dana Carvey turtle suit's probably going to do it. Wow. I didn't know if you knew who Dana Carvey was.
Of course I do. She's chopping broccoli, man.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Dana Carvey turtle suit 9/11 is the second thing that comes up. Yes, Dana Carvey prayed about 9/11 while in his Master of Disguise turtle suit, says the AV Club of The Onion, and it's not a joke. So, okay, it really happened.
Cool.
Yeah, okay.
That's history, man.
I mean, you know, in some ways, he's like...
Yeah, you do what you do.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm in the turtle suit, and 9/11 happened. What do you want me to do?
Exactly. Like, do you want me to be in my underwear in this prayer circle? Like, no one cares. Like, yeah. We're here to be together. You know what?
Good for you, Dana Carvey.
Yeah. I'm behind this. Yeah. I'm behind this. I support Dana Carvey in all things anyway.
Anyway, I have an actor for the first movie, the one where the guy says it's 80 cents in your hands and $1.20 in mine.
Oh, yeah.
This guy, I don't know if he can carry the movie, but this type of guy, Michael Shannon.
I'm worried about him carrying the movie.
Yeah.
I feel like younger Al Pacino, like 48-year-old Al Pacino is like perfect.
I could see that.
But I don't know how we cast that guy right now. Unless we de-age him, and that's not really working for me, the de-aging stuff.
Okay.
Michael Shannon's close.
Another guy who probably can't carry the movie, but works in a slightly different way, is the guy, he was the bad guy, I think, in the second Ant-Man, and he was in the first season of House of Cards as Peter, the congressman.
Oh, that's the first Ant-Man.
Oh, first Ant-Man.
Yeah, I know what you mean. He's also in the new Ant-Man, actually, as well.
Okay. Well, I feel like he could pull it off, at least that
Corey
scene.
Stahl, that's his name.
Yeah.
He has the right look for it, for sure. He's got the exact right look. But I think the concern is still, like, does he have the charisma to actually be the lead? He's never shown that.
You just have to pick a jack-of-all-trades who always crushes every role. Like, Christian Bale, of course, would do a good job.
Well, yeah.
Like, Jake Gyllenhaal.
You know
who would
be good? Actually, Leo DiCaprio.
Oh, yeah. He would be good.
Of course he'd be good.
He's always good.
Come on!
Yeah.
He'd be great at that. See, I'm doing... That's my audition for this role.
Was that you being Al Pacino?
Yeah. Hoo-ah. Come on! Okay. Right now, who am I being? I'm being an actor, famous actor, famous male actor.
Okay.
Hey, you over there. All right, who am I?
Clint Eastwood.
It's Al Pacino.
Okay.
I thought you were going to get that right away.
Yeah, it felt pretty Eastwoody to me.
Okay. You know, sure. In his best moments, maybe.
Yeah, in Gran Torino in that one part.
Gran Torino is so good.
I thought it was overrated.
So good.
I thought it was overrated.
Say it again, because we didn't hear you the first six times, Grant.
I said it twice. Always so much hyperbole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know, one of the things that we're talking about, Al Pacino, and one of his most famous roles was...
Scent of a Woman.
Yes, exactly.
Is that really where you're going?
That is exactly where I was going. Hoo-ah. Huh. And the reason why it's especially relevant is because I recently spent 30 hours blind, much like Al Pacino was making hoo-ah jokes while I was temporarily blind. This is real.
Yeah.
It's a real thing that just happened a few days ago.
So, you know, the lesson that Jonathan learned is what? Don't leave your contacts in too long? Was that the main takeaway?
Well, first of all, do not do that. My God, it can be really bad. I would say the actual main lesson is that it's super easy to take for granted stuff that I never even when I'm trying to be grateful, I don't think about, like, being pain-free, being able to see. Like, that's pretty awesome, and you don't need more than that. And this is not surprising stuff, but, like, it's cool to have money, and it's cool to have this and all the things you want in life, but if you don't have pain-free, it doesn't fucking matter. You can be as rich as hell, but I was very aware when I was I had one of the worst days of my life 4 days ago, and... in terms of pain and everything, it was wild. And I was blind at the same time. This has really happened.
And this is really real. Because you left your contacts in too long.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Crazy as that sounds. I pulled them out and I got corneal abrasions on both eyes that were very bad, as they said. Anyway, that like I was aware of like how much money I would have been willing to trade, especially in that first day, to like have like pain-freeness and health, because that was back before it was clear what was going on, before they had diagnosed me. And I thought, like, since both my eyes were going, like, something really bad was happening. Because, like, it didn't seem like it could be the context since it was both eyes. You know, that was very odd to me. Turns out it was.
You must have left them in for a really long time.
I mean, it was 12 hours. Oh, I mean,
I don't really know. I don't
that's
use,
normal amount of time. Contacts, so. People get up in the morning, wear them until they go to sleep normally.
So are they bad contacts?
It's a whole thing. Like, I think that they're the wrong shape for my eyes a little bit. So, like, there's a, they like fit weirdly on my eye. There's an oxygen issue. The thing, the corneas get swollen, then they stick. That's what they told me. Anyway, the point is, so when I was unclear if I was ever going to get my vision back, although I was optimistic, but it was unclear and I was in insane amounts of pain, I was like, there's kind of no amount of money I wouldn't pay to not be like this for the rest of my life. Like, it doesn't matter. Take it all. Take everything. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it's not worth it. So like that, it just, as we like, for me anyway, as I like want things in my life, and I do, and I, you know, want to be wealthier and have more things and have more stuff that
you
I
know,
like.
I have a little bit of a secret as to how you can attain those things.
What would that be?
Oh, we'll talk about it later.
Okay, I'm excited
to
hear
give
it.
Me 40 bucks and then we'll talk about it.
But like that, none of it matters if you're going to, like, it's way better to be like, for lack of a better term, like, you know, poor and, you know, whatever, but be healthy and pain-free. Like, that is, that's the whole game, man.
I believe that, certainly.
Yeah. I really got that on a deeper level when I was like, oh, yeah, who cares about all that other stuff? Like, nothing matters.
Not to get too psychological and philosophical here, but do you think ultimately it was a positive experience for you? Like, a year from now, it will have been a net benefit for you?
No, I do not. It was too awful. It was incredibly traumatic. It's cool that I got these lessons from it. These are lessons that could have been achieved in other ways, you know,
like stabbing yourself with a fork.
Exactly. Like I could have had less pain and done it, or I could have just hurt one eye or no eyes, you know, whatever it might be. And certainly we're all aware of these ideas anyway, right? It just got solidified a little bit stronger for me. I don't even know in a year if it's going to stick.
Probably not.
Cause often these things don't, right?
Yeah.
I hope it does. But I mean, the day after the first horrible day, I was doing much better. My eyes were still closed, but I went from being a 9.5 out of 10 on the pain scale for some of it, and the best I was on the first day was like a 6, 5.5, something like that. Which for me is, to be clear, you have to sit and breathe deeply, and you can't do anything else because you're in so much pain. That's like a 6 for me.
Okay,
I'm told that that's not a 6 for other people. So 9.5 to me, a 10 is literally the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. Which currently is when the doctor stuck a scalpel deep in the sole of my foot without telling me and no anesthetic, when it was already incredibly painful just to literally touch. That was the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
That's quite an image.
That was crazy.
Nobody likes that.
I didn't know it was coming. It was incredibly painful. I screamed and then went into shock, not surprisingly. He had to do it. It was fine. Anyway, but I don't know where I was going with this. I've forgotten everything. Because,
it's about perspective,
right,
having perspective.
Day 2, I woke up and I was still blind. But my pain was down to a 1.5, and I was like, I'll take this for the rest of the week right now. Can I sign up for this? Like, this is great. Like, if I can get better, that's great too. But like, this is amazing just to be at a 1.5, you know? Like, I was thrilled.
Well,
keep me blind. It's fine.
You wouldn't take that now because now it's 2 days later and you're almost all better.
Yeah, yeah. Now I have sight and I'm mostly at a 0 pain.
That's so better than a 1.5.
It is way better.
And also you can see.
It's really, seeing is really useful. Wow, is it useful.
So scent of a woman then.
Right. So I was doing the hoo-ah stuff because and I was trying to get Jen, who is a friend of ours, who these friends of ours were sort of taking care of me. And I was staying with them because obviously I couldn't do anything because I was in great pain and blind. So she was driving me around. I was trying to convince her to let me drive. I was like, Al Pacino did it instead of a woman, you know?
Yeah.
And she hadn't seen the movie, so she wouldn't let me do it.
But she would have had she seen
I really think so, because nothing bad happens when he does it. Remember, he's just driving, and Chris What's-His-Face is sitting next to him in the car, and it's fine. Chris O'Donnell or whatever, it's fine. Nothing. He doesn't, like, kill anyone. Remember? And then I was reminded that in that movie, he's the hero, and during the big heroic moment, he says he's going to take a flamethrower to the academy and burn it all down, but that's a heroic moment in the movie and not like a, what the fuck is going on? He just threatened minimum arson and maybe killing all of us. Very strange movie.
Kind of like Phil Hellmuth, the World Series of Poker.
A little bit like that, yes.
Except I don't think anybody saw him as a hero at that moment.
No. No, and it almost felt like Phil Hemuth was almost like being a derivative of Center of a Woman when he said that, yeah. You know? But anyway. All right, there you go. That's the whole adventure.
It was fun.
Good.
Great fun.
Less fun for me.
Yeah.
Less fun for me, but I'm happy now.
That's good. Yeah. Perspective is good. Speaking of perspective, you know what's important?
Here we go.
Journalistic perspective. And who would you go to expose government corruption when everybody else is too scared? Who would you go to tell the truth about the blue whales when everybody else is giving you bullshit? Who would you go to find out what Leonardo DiCaprio ate for breakfast?
Gawker?
Ben Page.
Ben Page! Get me Ben Page!
Get me Ben Page!
All right. Yeah, he's a suggester.
He's a great journalist, but he's reckless. Give me your gun and your badge, Page. You know?
Yeah. He's a journalist with a gun. I mean, that's another movie, right?
He's from Australia.
It's a great movie.
It's an Australian journalist.
By the way, that's a good name for a movie. Journalist with a gun. I'd see that. See the hell out of that.
It's kind of like a Snakes on a Plane type.
Tom Cruise is journalist with a gun. Now it's not Snakes on a Plane. Now it's a fucking $1 billion extravaganza.
Yeah, he goes to space.
He does his own stunts. He's actually shooting people.
Yeah, they die.
He's like, I'm not going to do it unless I can actually shoot people. And they're like, well, okay.
Can you try to miss the vital parts of their body? No, it has to be real.
He's like, this is I go for authenticity, man.
Yeah.
They can shoot at me too, but my character never gets hit, so they can't hit me.
Which is authentic.
Yeah.
Because I'm fast. And I'm
he is fast.
Journalist with a gun.
He's like 63 and he's fast as hell.
He's probably not so fast anymore. He's probably fast for a 63-year-old.
The new Mission Impossible movie is coming out soon, and I think he was 60 when they were filming. I'm sure he's gonna run. He does the Tom Cruise running thing, so we'll see. We'll see how fucking fast he is. I bet you he's fast.
I hope he's fast. I want to see a 60-year-old fast guy.
I mean, he exists, and his name is Tom.
Yeah, and he has the secret. And it's not that book. It's something else. Anyway.
For $40. All right, should we get to this thing?
They ask for a lot more than that. It's a 20K buy-in. That's significant.
Sure, probably although for Triton, that's kind of small.
Yeah, but it's probably a pretty tough field. You know, 700-handed Triton, 20K buy-in.
I don't think I'm spoiling anything because there's 23 players left. Jason Kuhn ends up winning this thing.
Okay.
So, there's good players.
Yeah, there's good players. 23 remain. Again, this was suggested by Ben Page. He did it on Discord. If you want to sign up for our Discord, there's a link in the description of this podcast to sign up. Mm-hmm. You can also suggest on Twitter, if Twitter is still operating at the time that you're hearing this. 23 out of one. I mean, they've been having problems.
Wow.
Here. 20 get paid.
Yep.
Out of 23.
Okay.
And what's the min cash? Did you look
at it? I have that.
Yeah.
The min cash is, sorry, my eyes are not amazing, $35,800 on this 20K thing. And to be clear, I don't know what happens in this hand. I've heard Grant vaguely describe it at best, and I can't read the description that he normally puts in the notes. So we're going to do this together, audience. We're gonna walk through this one together.
All right. Well, what I'll tell you about the hand is that it is different than most hands that we've ever done.
Okay.
Certainly. We can probably come up with reasons for everything that's done, but we'll see.
Let's find out.
So, first to act is Punat Poonsri. I'm not sure if I'm getting his first name right, but the commentator does say Poonsri for his last name. He won before this event the Cyprus Triton main event for $2.6 million, just in the same series, I believe.
Not in the same series.
Really?
No.
Okay, so he won the main event of a different Triton.
He won, that was in September 2022, he won the Cyprus main. So yeah, he just came back to slay some more.
Okay.
You know?
So he's having a good time, enjoying his life.
He's had other successful things. Actually, just 14 days before this event, he did win the APT main event, that's the Asian Poker Tour, in Taipei City. For $364,000.
Okay, and he's got like an $8 million hand in or something.
He has a $7.8 million hand in.
Right, yes. So we think this guy's probably pretty legit.
Yeah.
He's got under 20 bigs though, so how legit could he be?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, maybe reconsider before just agreeing with me. Wow.
Yeah,
somebody did not read the Book of Scientology. 50K, big blind. He's got 900K.
Okay.
He's going to open King 8 suited under the gun to 100K.
They just do this now.
Yeah,
even at 18 blinds.
Even at 18 bigs, he's opening King 8 suited. I mean, King 8 suited is like an open under the gun in an unraked game, but not, you wouldn't think with 18 bigs, but I guess it is.
Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, I think, in a tournament even, I think it's an open under the gun.
Well, a tournament is unraked game.
Oh, fair enough. I just wanted to just make it clear what the hell we're talking about
here. Right, right. When I say unranked game, I mean nothing is lost from the pot after like pre-flop action.
Yeah, so we can open that. Yeah. But that is very surprising to me. And it feels like he's stretching. Is his table full of doughboys or something?
No, Jason Kuhn's at the table. Yeah.
Okay.
Doughboys. Yeah. No, and that's the last thing you would use to describe Jason Kuhn, of course.
Oh, my God.
Yoked AF, bro. Anyway.
He is too swole.
Yeah. Poonsri opens king eight suited, spades, under the gun to 100K. It's probably correct considering this guy's resume.
I assume it's fine.
It's not actually under the gun in a nine-handed way. Also, it's seven-handed. Still early position.
That is better, though.
Yeah.
That does change it.
It does.
I still wouldn't do it with 18 blinds personally, but he's gotta be better than us, right?
I assume he is, and he's probably more studied on tournament strategy.
Yes.
But, you know, without thinking about the actual strategy of it, trying to get into the mind of I'm playing a $500 local tournament here. Yeah. Where is the position that you're min opening king eight suited
with 18 blinds?
18 blinds in that tournament?
The cutoff.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, I think like he needs to be balanced, right? He needs to be able to have board coverage. He needs to be balanced. He needs all these different kinds of things. So this hand is part of that greater range of being balanced.
Yeah.
We don't need to be like that, people.
No.
Again, these $500 tournaments. So let's not be like,
right.
Like it's such a marginal open. You just don't have to do it.
Yep. Folds around to the big blind, who is Ian Bradley, a British national of great esteem. I'm not
really?
Sure. No, I don't think so. I don't know. He's got something like 1.2 in Hendon, 1.2 million.
I'm re-looking him up right now. He has 1.267 in Hendon.
So, I mean, he could be a rich guy or he could be kind of a guy who's trying to make it on the circuit. It's hard to tell.
Looking at his Hendon mob, my best guess is that he's been slowly working his way up and he's finally made it to the Triton. Because it's like the buy-ins that he cashes in just like slowly are getting bigger and bigger. And we finally made it to this 20K.
Okay. Well, good for him.
Yeah.
He's here. He's got ace four of spades, and he's going to call out of the big blind.
Okay, so we got spade on spade action here.
We do. It doesn't really seem like there's any other option besides calling, right?
How many blinds does he have again? I'm sorry.
He has 1.6 million to start the hand. So he's
got 25 blinds?
Let's see. So Poonsri has 18. Bradley has... No, he's got 30 blinds.
Oh, 30 blinds. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
32.
With Poonsri opening at 18 blinds, I mean, you could just raise. You could just move him in.
Yeah, but he opened from the strongest position.
I understand. But if we know he's opening as wide as this, you know, and probably a lot of these guys are, it's possible with an ace in your hand and a suited ace wheel, especially, like, it's okay just to move in for 18 blinds. I would think that's probably a profitable play anyway. I don't know if it's the optimal play, but it's probably
feels reckless when you can just call for one more blind.
Yeah. It's true, but there are, you know, one, two, three, four and a half blinds just sitting there, which you pick up a lot when you move in, and when you call, you mostly lose.
I feel like I'm talking to Wonka right now. That sounds very much like a Wonka argument.
Well, you know, these guys, when they're playing, the reason why they're opening king eight in early position is because they got to win on the margins, right? There's no big chunk of pie just to take a big bite out of against these guys, right? You have to, like, really grind out these tiny, tiny edges. So, like, moving in might be a way to grind out. Maybe it isn't. Maybe the better play is to call. But I think there is edge, at least, in, like, there is profit in moving in here with ace four suited. Like, I think you're going to get a fold plus win the pot enough of the time that it's you make money doing it, at least.
I'm unconvinced.
I understand.
Yeah.
That's your old school, you know, 1993 Josh Arie type thing, brain working right now.
1993 Josh Arie?
Sure, I don't know.
Why not? Anyway, he calls because he's not a freaking idiot.
I would mostly call too, for sure.
And there's going to be 275K in the pot, and it's going to be spade on spade, as you said. So let's hope for Poonsri that spades don't come.
A quick question before we hit it. Would you be moving in if the button opened?
Yeah.
18 blinds.
I think... sometimes, not always.
Certainly not always, right? Yeah. But sometimes. How about the cutoff?
Same, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And would that be where it stops for you?
Around there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, just checking.
Yep. I mean, it's probably better to have a few more move-ins than we do, but again, we're playing against fields where we don't want to play these high variant styles.
And we don't
typically
have to. Right? The thing is, we don't have to play, right? If you have to play a higher variant style, you should be moving in a lot, right?
Yeah.
But if you look around and you're like, I mean... just sit back and let the chips come to you, like, then you can do that too. And like, you don't have to.
That is not the case in this 20K Triton.
No, of course not.
Of course.
Of course.
It might be the case for you on Nitro Betting.
Whoa. Let the chips come to you by sitting back.
Hell yeah.
I love that strategy.
Also, just by getting the promotions. There's lots of cool sports betting promotions coming down the pipe all the time on Nitro Betting. Use the link in the description of this podcast when you sign up for Nitro Betting, or you don't get access to those promotions or the Poker Guys Monthly Tournament. And you don't get our respect. Which is valued by not only you, but your mother, and she'll know.
She will know.
Yeah.
Because we're telling her.
Yeah. We're telling all of your mothers.
I do not respect him.
Yeah.
Or her.
Yeah.
Because I don't know who's listening.
2 to 3% of the audience is women, I believe.
So, okay.
So.
Let's not, you know, be a dick about it.
Thank you for listening, all people. Anyway.
Yeah.
Use the link, sign up for Nitro Betting. There's cool sports betting. There's casino games. It's Bitcoin only. And when you cash out, they don't fuck around with your money.
It's cashish all the weesh.
You should have been in marketing. Why?
Like, I mean, that might go viral. Cashish all the weesh, like weak, but weesh. That's strong. I can see the kids saying that.
Your conception of what might go viral is a bit broad.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. I need to hone it in a little bit.
Yeah, right? It's a little bit less of the stuff that just rhymes and doesn't make any sense and more things that are actually things that people would...
Cashish all the weesh. I don't know. Pauly Shore went pretty crazy there for a while and he just said dumb shit.
Yeah, but there was something to that.
Oh my goodness.
He was different than anything that had come before.
Yes, and cashish all the weesh isn't?
I'm sure somebody on Entourage said that.
Oh,
I don't know.
Fuck you, Grant. Fuck yeah. You
Turtle,
always
Turtle
do
said that shit every episode. You know what I'm talking about.
Remember that one with Johnny Drama?
I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And Sloan and E-Dog, they broke up again.
Did they? That's too bad.
It was so sad.
I have not seen that show for a very long time, and I did not finish the run.
No,
I got a little tired
of it. That is an unfinishable run right there.
Yeah. Yeah. At first, it seemed like something new and exciting.
It was.
And I was also in high school, so I was like, you know, the wish fulfillment thing was strong.
Big time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it just gets pretty dumb.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's really vapid, right? Yeah. Anyway.
Anywho.
Nitro Betting, not vapid, full of Bitcoin. It could be yours if you win and you get it out. And which they do quickly.
Which you will be able to do. You make it sound like that's another obstacle.
What I mean is opt to get it out.
Yeah, okay. Because then you
will receive it within 90 minutes.
You get it right away.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing, just like ace four suited. That's a nice hand to have.
It is, especially when you're up against king eight suited of the same suit.
That is extra nice. But, you know, ace wheel suited, it's got that really pretty look to it, you know?
It does.
You like having that.
And ace four especially, because it first looks like ace ace, but then you're like, oh, it's the 1-4 that I really like. It's the four of the same suit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
good. So, okay.
So there's 275K in the pot.
Right.
Hey, guess what I didn't do?
Write down the flop?
That would be it.
Good Lord.
That's the one.
Good golly.
It's going to just take a second for
it's
me
okay.
to... I'm going to find
I'm blind it. Anyway, so it doesn't matter. I can't see it. I wouldn't have known that you didn't write down the flop, except you called it out.
I mean, the only reason I know I didn't write down the flop is because I'm trying to read the flop, and there's nothing there.
You could have like started talking about, like, doing a little classic Poker Guys deviation moment.
Tell
a cool story.
Why hide the truth, right? Why? Why not just let the people know what's going on? Seven of hearts, jack of spades, seven of diamonds.
Oh, okay. Seven, seven, jack, one spade?
Yeah, seven of hearts, jack of spades, seven of diamonds.
Okay.
I'm going to write that down so we don't mess it up.
Right.
So, yeah, how could this be a breakdown hand, they might ask?
Seven of hearts, jack of spades, jack of diamonds.
Nope, seven of diamonds.
Right.
Two sevens and a jack, one spade. They both have two spades in their hands, ace four against king eight. Poonri, the opener with king eight. Bradley checks.
Fine.
He could lead. I mean, it's like when we're three from the money and the sevens pair and he's out of the big blind and the guy with 18 blinds open under the gun, you could really just start to threaten his stack right now.
That's true. I mean, he's not going to fold over pairs. He's not going to fold the jack, but it's going to be tough to play 10-10-9-9. You may just want to stay out of the trouble. I'm going to go call fold. Like, why?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah.
Although...
You also block the gutters if you have 10s and 9s and 8s.
True. Yeah.
What are you going to say?
Although, you probably know, as Bradley, that Poonsri is likely to continue on this board with anything that he does have because he is desperate for every pot, and this is a dry board that favors him.
And we're near the bubble, too. So, like, even more so, he's likely to just take shots, right?
Yeah. So, check raising might be a better way to go.
Yeah. I mean, check raising is cool. You just got to be careful you don't put yourself in the blender a little bit. But you assume Poonsry's probably not going to bet huge on this board, right?
No, he does not. When checked to, he bet 65K.
Oh, okay.
65 and a 275. It's totally reasonable to...
It's totally fine. It's going to work a lot.
Yeah.
It's no problem to do that. But yeah, if we certainly can't fold ace four here, right? So the only question is, do we want to call or raise, right?
Before we get to that...
Okay.
As Poonsry, in this exact scenario, yeah, are there any hands in your range that you're checking?
The only hands in my range that I'm checking are monsters. So like 7-7. Seven, seven. If I got quad sevens, I'm probably checking.
And jack-jack?
Right? With 18 blinds, we can probably check jack-jack. I guess we could check aces once in a while, too.
Yeah. You know?
Do we have any give-ups? Look, against these guys, if we're checking those true monsters, we need to have a few give-ups, too. We need to have some checks that aren't strong hands. Otherwise... Every time we check, they're going to know we have it, right?
So maybe when we have like ace wheel without a backdoor flush draw, we can give up on those hands.
The problem is ace high, it might be good. So that's not even necessarily...
Well, I'm just trying to think of what hands in our range make sense then, because everything else at least has back doors.
Yeah.
Like sixes, maybe sixes. Just give up with sixes. But there's so
much...
We're
not necessarily giving up.
Yeah.
We're just keeping the pot small. It's a little different, right?
But the equity denial is so valuable with a hand like sixes.
Exactly. You're going to bet sixes for sure, right? For sure. You might bet ace high for the same reason, just as equity denial.
Yeah.
So maybe we're looking at things like queen highs. Although queen highs are all gutters, right?
No, it's 7-7 jack.
Okay, they're not gutters. Okay, so like, so queen 10, queen 9...
Those are usually going to have at least one back. Maybe the ones that are
backdoor straight
of clubs. Maybe queen 10 and queen 9 of clubs we check back because they don't have backdoor flush draws. But the other queen 10s and queen 9s are really tempting to bet because they have no showdown value and they have two backdoors.
Okay. So then we're going to have more than just that. So we need a little bit more at least. So maybe then we're also doing the same with some of our king highs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like our king 10s.
Like our king 8 suiteds that are not... Spades, hearts, or diamonds?
King queen is kind of a nice check back because we got over cards we can hit. We can hit a bunch of straight draws on the turn also. We keep the pot small so we don't get blown off the hand. We can sometimes win a showdown.
And we have king queen off. Maybe we check back all of our unsuited king queens and the one that doesn't have the backdoor flush draw, and that gives us 13
that gives
combos.
More than enough.
13
yeah.
combos right there.
Okay. And then we can have some super strong check backs too, and we're good. Obviously, we have to mix. Obviously, once in a while, we have to bet our aces. We should bet our set of jacks, maybe a tiny bit. But mostly, we should be checking those because we have 18 blinds. We can easily get it in later, and we're not afraid of anything.
We did it. Anyway, Poonsry has a hand that really kind of wants to be bet. The king eight of spades, where it has two back doors and not a lot of showdown value, and we could really use this pot.
Yep.
So we bet 65K.
Fine.
It seems obligatory for Bradley to continue in this pot.
Yes.
With the backdoor nut flush draw and ace high here.
No question.
So is it a call or a raise? What's better?
What's better? I think if we raise, especially considering how short our opponent is and the bubble situation, we are going to get a huge amount of folds.
Yep.
A huge, huge, huge amount of folds. If he's betting sixes to deny equity, he's just going to fold them now, right? Like with 18 blinds, like 16 blinds now or 15 blinds or whatever it is, right? Like it just puts him in all these weird, sticky situations, even with okay hands that he was betting because he feels he has to bet. Like nines.
Yeah.
If he bets nines, and maybe he checks back nines sometimes as like part of his check back range. That's not an unreasonable
one. Sensible hand type
for
that.
Yeah, that's kind of a good one to do.
Yeah.
But let's say he sometimes bets nines too, which I would believe he's going to bet sometimes because of all the other reasons. Like, let's pick up this fucking pot. Let's not just give away a free card, which is going to beat me now. Or put me in a spot where I end up folding to a bluff or something like that, right? What are nines supposed to do when they're check raised? Are they supposed to hold on? I mean, we block the gutters.
No.
Anything on the board beats us.
That's the worst hand to call with.
Yeah, exactly. Nines, tens, and eights are the worst hands, right?
Yeah.
So it's that's why it's such a good check back hand, too. But still, I think we're going to bet that a bunch because of the meta circumstances here, right?
Yeah.
We're just going to put them on a bunch of tough spots.
And we also have a clear thing that we're representing, which is a seven.
Yeah, and we can really have a seven.
We have a lot of sevens.
We have the sevens, man.
Yeah. So that's what Bradley goes for. He raises to 185, and I think that's a good play.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
It's not even that pricey because Poonsry bets so small.
All right, we're going to get into maybe these guys know each other territory now.
Okay.
Because you would think this is the end of things. Poonsry would fold.
Yeah. Like, okay, we lose.
Poonsry three bets.
I mean, I can see why.
He doesn't,
I can see it.
He doesn't move any. Three bets to 350K over 185.
He's basically clicking it back here.
Yeah. This is...
I mean, he's actually clicking it back here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so it seems like pretty clear why he's doing it, though, right? He's got an eight in his hand. Like, it's got to be the eight, right? He blocks 7-8.
I guess, but it's not. It's not like Bradley needs.
I know.
To have a reasonable seven. To have
he
a
has
seven.
All the suited sevens, yeah. Right? It was a min raise.
Yeah,
all the suited sevens and all the big sevens. He's got king seven, probably.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not sure if he has king seven on the bubble here, actually, or near the bubble.
It was suited, like many blinds. At least.
Oh, all every suited seven in the book, probably in the deck, except maybe seven deuce, and maybe he even has that.
Maybe,
but he might have that. But yeah, he's got so many more sevens. It's crazy.
Right.
Than Poonsry.
So yeah, the eight, I guess, is. Good to block 7-8 off, but it's not a huge blocker.
It's not a great blocker in this spot. As opposed to like if the small blind made this play,
yeah.
Have an 8 in her hand, it's way better, right? Or just someone call the middle position or the button and now they raise here.
Yeah.
Like, well, we block it's you don't have as many sevens as, you know, I block some of the key sevens here.
Yeah.
The key sevens.
The key sevens.
That means.
Yeah, the key sevens. Yeah, I'm not sure if that adds up, but so
yeah,
this, that's why I
does.
Said maybe
right.
maybe these guys know each other. Maybe Poonsry right. has witnessed Bradley doing a lot of this type of play out of the big blind.
I will say that in the big blind, when the board is paired and it's with a lowish card, that's all you.
Yeah.
Check raising is just insanely profitable.
Yeah.
So if Poonsry knows that, I was going to call him Franklin, but
Bradley.
It's like Bradley knows that too, and Bradley's capable of that, then... I can see why you'd fight back, but boy, you put yourself in some weird spots doing
yep.
that, right? Like, good golly, Miss Molly. Like, what if he doesn't fold? What if he doesn't fold? If he doesn't fold, it's such a fucking disaster now, right? How many chips are we going to have left if he doesn't fucking fold?
450K, and that's...
We're going to have 9 blinds.
Yeah.
I mean, we just didn't have to do that, right?
Yeah.
We could have had 15 blinds. That's a yep. huge difference.
It feels like there could have been, you know, a different hand that we could have for this.
Yes, it does. What hand do we want to have for this? The gut shot?
I mean, over pairs that just are going with it some, you know, if you want to. I mean, it's probably better to call with
those. We're just going to call. We're just going to call with that. We're just going to call with the jack. The problem is that with our three bet really is, what hands aren't we just calling with?
Yeah.
Like, what hands, like if we have jack, are we really putting in the three bet right now instead of calling and letting him fucking barrel when he doesn't
have it?
It
would have to be a real metagame play of like, this guy goes for it a lot over these weird bets.
You'd really hate to like fold out 9-10 instead of just calling and letting him either get there or continue. Like he could smack his eight, you've got him drawing dead.
Yeah.
And he's excited to get it in, or he just moves in on you anyway, you know, sometimes. It's hard to imagine we have a three betting range here with value at all.
Yeah.
Unless... the metagame is just out the fucking window, which I guess is possible, but I don't know how likely that is. This feels like a mistake, this three bet, because of that, because I don't know what we're actually repping here.
Yeah, I mean, it might really be effective, though, overall. If Bradley's the guy who's check-raising this flop all the time with ace-four suited.
Yeah, and he just gives up once he's like, oh, you're not folding. Okay.
But there might be a leveling war going on because Bradley moves all
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
He four bets all in. That's, he's like, you can't fucking have anything.
He's like, you never have it.
Right.
By the way, if you have something that's pretty good, do you like it now?
Yeah, with three off the money.
You still have 9 blinds.
Yeah.
You sure you want to call with pocket queens now, motherfucker?
Yeah.
I just 4-bet all in.
3 off the money.
But the truth is, of course, if you 3-bet queens, you do have to call there with queens.
You do.
But and I assume Bradley knows that. But Bradley also knows queens is just never in a million years 3-betting, right?
Yeah.
It's just never. It's always going to call. A 7 is always going to call.
If these guys are both on the high roller circuit for a while and they have a lot of iterations of this, then there will be versions where Poonsry has queens and calls.
Yes.
You know?
And maybe also where he has like jack.
Yeah.
Even. But those are going to be few and far between. And I can understand why Bradley's sitting there thinking like, how often do I get called in this spot? Like kind of never, right? Like maybe 7% of the time I get called and the rest of the time I win. Something like 4% of the time I get called. Like that's a good move-in. Right. And
so,
by the
so you like this move in?
Yes.
Just I because do. Of the story Poonsry's telling?
The story is so insanely bad. I like the move in a lot.
Okay.
If Poonsry could show me that he's capable of having something here, that would be really different. And capable of having something with any level of frequency, not just having it once.
I mean, he might
times.
Be capable of that with his resume.
Obviously, Bradley doesn't think so.
Yeah. Or Bradley got lucky this time.
Yes, or Bradley, yeah, Bradley doesn't know what he's doing and got lucky. Like, it's not impossible, but when the clickback is also just so, I'm saving 9 blinds. I mean, it could be I'm not trying to scare you off, but If you're not trying to scare me off, just call.
I mean,
you're
this
short
feels,
enough, you can just call. You're in position.
This feels like Benny Spindler against Melanie Weisner in 2011 or something. You know, it's got that vibe to it, the click war.
Yeah. This is a cool thing, though, to move in, to actually do it. It's one thing to, like, believe that they don't have it and they can't have it, but usually people fold anyway.
Instead of being the guy who's like, I know you don't got it, exactly. I fold.
The worst thing is when I say, I bet you're bluffing me as they fold. It's like, you absolutely do not bet that I'm bluffing you because you folded. Like, betting is you put the chips in.
Right.
Like, no action. Show me your portfolio, buddy. Don't tell me what you think, right?
Yeah.
But this is Bradley's got a portfolio that he's showing.
Yeah. And it works. Boonsri folds.
I mean, of course he folds.
Yeah.
He has the worst hand. It's a great fold.
So how did these guys end up?
Oh, well, you know, I can tell you that because I have that information.
I'd love it if you would tell
me. Okay. So Boonsri finishes 10th.
Oh, wow.
$55,000.
He recovers.
He takes that. He spins that 9 blinds back up. I guess he gets some doubles pretty quickly there.
I mean, I guess that's why he didn't move in, except had he moved in, he would have just won the pot.
Yeah.
I
mean, when he looks back on it now, he's probably like, fuck, I mean, depending on what the hands were that he doubled up on later and stuff like that. Maybe there were some coolers where he could have like had a lot more chips. You never know. Anyway, Ian Bradley finished 7th for $115,900. Mm-hmm. Well behind people like Adrian Mateos, 5th, Stephen Chidwick, 3rd, and of course, the already aforementioned...
Already aforementioned.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I did done. It on purpose. Jason Kuhn, Mr. Swole, I got muscles coming out of my earballs.
Right. He says that to people.
Yeah. Jason Kuhn, who won the whole thing for
$660,000. That's a murderer's row right there.
Yeah. There were other great people in this who were still alive. Dushan Winter finished 8th in this event. Archer Marti, I know what you're talking about. I would be able to, if I could see a little better, I'd be able to sound out his name, but I can't see.
It's Limitless, right?
No, it's not Limitless. Oh. It's not Limitless, but he's like done very well though. $155,000 for 6th place. Anyone else of note here? Hosan Ensen, 13th.
Still kicking.
Tom Dwan, 14th. Patrick Antonius, 16th. Isaac Haxton, 19th. I mean, it ain't a freebie, this one.
We should not enter these tournaments.
No, I'm happy not to play these.
Yeah, that sounds...
I mean, it would be maybe fun once.
It'd be like intellectual exercise.
That was a dumb way to spend $20,000, like burn $20,000.
Yeah, oh, cool. I've never felt worse at poker in my life. That was great.
Yeah. And it cost me $20,000 to find that out.
Yeah.
Like, that, for that experience, yeah. I could just open my Twitter mentions.
Oh, yeah.
Da-dunch.
Oh, baby, you got them again.
Every time, bro.
All right, we're done.
Hey, the first time, no rehearsal. I say fuck second take. 90s baby scratching on vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second dates, I'm the rapper.